Aloha mai kākou, everyone. O'au Moana, Moana Ku'uinoa. Welcome to the Moana Nui podcast as part of our second episode as we celebrate Olelo Hawaii Month or Hawaiian Language Month, which is something that's really important to our community, keeping our language alive. It is a huge part of our culture, and we are honored and grateful for our sponsor, Papa Olelo Kahi, to help us to continue to bring these conversations and mana'o to our community. We are also grateful to our wonderful panelists who have accepted our invitation tonight to be a part of this conversation. Tonight, our topic is kuleana. And for those who don't know what that means, we're going to explore that tonight. Kuleana is a concept that I learned from my father at a very young age, and it's something that I have carried throughout my life. My own kuleana has evolved throughout my life, and as I continue my own journey of self-discovery and building a deeper knowledge and understanding of my kupuna, my ancestors, and who they were, it is really helping me to better embrace the kuleana that I carry today as a leader, a mentor, a protector, a practitioner, an author, an ambassador for Hawaii, and so much more. So mahalo nui to our kupuna. And kuleana is also the title of the series that we do for Papa Olelo Kahi. So if this is the first time that you're tuning into the Moana Nui podcast, we definitely invite you to visit our YouTube channel, Moana Nui Podcast, subscribe, and you can get access to all of our different panels that we have already done. We've had wonderful conversations already, and we're so happy to continue this series. So kuleana is the Hawaiian word for responsibility, but it has a lot of different meanings. It could be a right, a privilege, a title, an estate, a portion of land, if you're talking about land issues, a claim, and also ownership. And in Hawaiian custom, kuleana is typically given to those who demonstrate their readiness and worthiness to handle a responsibility. And so tonight, I invited folks with diverse backgrounds and different roles to talk about their kuleana and how that shows up for them in their life. So before we get started, I wanted to go ahead and introduce them. The first person is someone that I met at the CNHA, or Center for Native Hawaiian Advancement Conference, in June last year. Jeff Renaud, he currently lives in Vegas with his partner Javier and his two sons, as well as his in-laws and his two little shih tzu. He was born in Kahuku, Oahu, and raised in La'ie. Jeff attended Kahuku High School and graduated in 1991. He left Boise State and graduated with a BS in political science. He's always wanted to help our lahui, and since 2009, he was asked to do his family's mo'oku hauhau, and that's genealogy, family genealogy. But he wasn't really sure where to start. So fast forward almost 15 years later, he considers himself the family historian, not just a genealogist. His love for his tutu or his ancestors is never ending. And as he says, they're not just dates to him, but when he says their names, they live again. So we want to welcome Jeff to our show. Aloha, Jeff.
Aloha, everybody. Aloha, kākou.
Aloha. Mahalo nui. Our next guest is Ikaika Kukaniloko. He is originally from Waianae, Hawaii. He is a former professional dancer with Nonosina Polynesia. He's also a veteran and former Army Ranger in the 75th Ranger Regiment. And he has 29 years of experience in martial arts, to include modern lua, which is Hawaii's form of martial arts, and Rixen Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. He is currently a kia'i okapuka, a kumu kokua, a'o, koa, and haumana at Pālua Omanu. Welcome, Ikaika. Aloha. Komu mai.
Aloha, kākou.
Awesome. And our third guest is Rochelle Cassetta. She is the founding owner and chief instructor of Highland Kempo in Louisville, Kentucky. After obtaining her BS, Bachelor of Science, in secondary education from Indiana University and a brief stint teaching high school social studies, she began her long career in the IT field. And to improve her physical strength, Rochelle began an exploration of several different styles of martial arts. She chose in-depth studies of Kempo with Professor Roger Lee of Louisville, Kentucky. She's also a certified instructor of level one Krav Maga and is a senior Hawaiian Lua student of Kumu Michelle Manu, who we've had on the podcast a bunch of times. Aloha, Kumu Michelle. Rochelle is also an officer of NACOA. And she, for several years, she was also a licensed and registered executive protection officer. Welcome, Kumu Michelle. Rochelle. Aloha.
Aloha. Good evening.
Aloha. All righty. So let's start tonight's conversation. We're talking about the concept of kuleana, and I'm curious, what does that mean for you? What did your kupuna or your kumu teach you about kuleana, and how was that passed on to you? Ikaika, let's start with you, then we'll have Jeff and Rochelle.
Yeah, so just like what you said earlier, that if to me, kuleana, if you demonstrate the ability to handle certain responsibilities and handle them well, then your kumu will choose you because of the character traits that you've demonstrated, giving them the confidence that you could handle this. So for me, being bestowed the honor of being a kia'i for a pālua, knowing that's a great responsibility, it was actually, to me, kuleana also simultaneously for myself, the word honor comes to mind as well, because it's not a right to me, kuleana, especially if you're chosen for one, it's also a privilege that you take very seriously every single day. So,
yeah, I loved how you brought up the concept of honor, because I view it very similarly. It's not something that you can just take for granted. It is a responsibility. It is an honor. And there is like a higher level of expectation when those things are given and passed to you, whether it be your ohana or your kumu in your perspective. Jeff, what are your thoughts? Do you have similar things? Do you look at it differently? What do you think?
No, I think it's similar. In a nutshell, kuleana is obviously, we know it as a responsibility. And I don't think you choose to do that. It's bestowed on you normally, usually by your kupuna, your tutus, right? And for me, my kuleana is our family genealogy, our mokuaho. And I was thrown in it. I didn't really know much about it in the beginning. So that's where I started. My sister was the one that actually asked me to do it. We had a family reunion. So that's where it started. And I only knew, obviously, a lot of us know our grandparents. And then anything beyond that, we don't know. But I was fortunate enough to actually be raised by my great-grandmother. So and I was young. But I still remember like it was yesterday, and that always stuck with me all the way until I got older, and how much I appreciated things back then as a kid versus now. And then myself, I'm also the oldest of the siblings. So I have that on me right off the bat just because I'm the eldest, and I look at it as being a role model because you're not only leading the family, but you have to basically be impartial when there's issues that come up or any kind of pili kid within the family. Sometimes I fall. That's normal, I think. But I spend a lot of time in prayer, like pulling and stuff like that. So it does help me.
I love that you brought up the kuleana of being the oldest, because I have that shared mana'o too. So being impartial during the family disputes, yes. And I think we'll probably hear something similar from Kia'i Rochelle and Kia'i Ikaika in their roles as kumu kokua for kapalua o manu. Kumu Rochelle, what are your thoughts about kuleana and how that was passed to you?
Prior to me even learning the term kuleana, the familial obligation, the responsibility to my elders and my ancestors, the responsibility to uphold a family name was something ingrained before I ever even started school. So everything that Kia'i Kaika and Jeff mentioned, I wholeheartedly agree with, but I would add that there is a level of personal acceptance as well. As we grow, as we mature, as we learn, our kuleana changes. And sometimes we don't think we're ready for it. And life doesn't care if we think we're ready for it. It presents, and then we accept. And that's part of our maturity, our personal growth, is to accept the kuleana as it is offered, as we have those opportunities. Now, I will say, my grandfather and his mother, my great-grandmother, were pivotal and key in laying in that base code for me. So, Jeff, I completely feel you when you mentioned your great-grandmother. That is a bond and a tie to another time, to another lifestyle. And we can bring that into today still.
Yes, I love that. The bond to another time, another lifestyle. And I think something that needs to be brought into the modern era, the era of the present, because there is a lot of so much, what do we call it in Hawaiian? It's like indigenous knowledge that is lacking these days, that is, it has those deep values and that helps to guide like the way we operate in our spaces, in our lives. When you don't have access to that, it's being a ship lost at sea, rudderless, like not having that direction. And it's very unfortunate when you see people who don't have that and who need that guidance. And I think that's part of kuleana, right? When we take on these roles as leaders for those who are around us. So, which is a good kind of segue into my next question. We've talked a little bit about kuleana itself. How do you feel like what is your kuleana for the lahui or the community around you? Can you guys talk a little bit about that? And whoever wants to jump in first on that one is great.
I think that acceptance of the kuleana for the community is key, whether you live back home on the island or you are on the continent in the middle of a huge urban sprawl. If you lose that connection to community, you lose that sense of responsibility to your neighbor, then that anchor to civility is lost. So there are societal requirements that just because we draw breath, we are obligated to perform. And I think in this technological era of social media and everybody liking and not liking, we forget we're all humans. We all have struggles. We all have happy days. We all have bad days. And that's my dissertation for the moment.
Welcome to her TED Talk. Ikaika or Jeff, you have mana'o?
Well, yeah, I agree with what Kia'i Rochelle said. The thing is, too, is with kuleana, and especially when the tupuna choose you for this kuleana, that your role isn't for you. The thing is that, especially if you're specifically chosen by the tupuna for a certain kuleana, usually you're the representative here and now that's to share the specific ike that you possess with your community. So not only are you helping preserve that ike, but you're perpetuating it, making sure it survives and it grows. And I think that's a deep part, regardless of which kuleana that you have, that the tupuna have chosen for you, your responsibility is to preserve and perpetuate and also protect whatever ike that it is that you have and you're sharing. So it's not just for you. And so I think that's another part of kuleana that's very important, is that your service to your community. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, that's beautiful that it's pulling on that thread about it's not just about you. It's about your responsibility to share the knowledge for the community that is with you today. And yeah, 100% agree. Jeff, how about you?
So when I was in school, high school, I always wanted to do something in the political realm to help our people. And at that time, We didn't have access to a lot of the grants and stuff from Kamehameha schools because we're leaving to go to the States, which I thought was weird because a lot of us wanted to go away, not necessarily to get away from home, but, you know, there's to learn more and to see what's out there. And so that's what I did. But when I met you at the convention here in Vegas, the Native Hawaiian convention back in June, but it really inspired me because even though I attended the workshop for the Mo'okua'ahau, I did attend the hula one and the chants and olelo. So for me right now, I've been learning our language, right? Olelo. So I think it's pretty important, especially now with all the reawakening of the young coming up and they're really putting themselves out there at the front. And I really appreciate that. I like that. So it's very inspiring and it makes me want to be a better Kanaka, right? Even though we live here in the States, there's a lot of us that do now live in the States, especially here in Vegas, where they call it the Ninth Island. But there's a lot of us here already, and there's a lot of groups here. And one of the olelo classes that I've taken online from Kumu Kahanu'ola from Kamehameha Schools, he's actually coming here in 2 weeks because this month is olelo month, right? So I know with Zippies and all that, we have a Zippies here now, so it's a big deal. And I'm pretty sure like the classes are probably already booked or sold. So, but that's what I want. I always wanted to do that. But obviously my path led me on a different from when I started off in high school till now. But I think it's important anyway for all of us, if you are Kanaka, to learn whatever it is, if it's the language, the chants, the cultures and stuff like that of home. But a lot of us was fortunate enough, the ones that were raised in Hawaii when we were little. But yeah, I think that's my little manao there to share.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think it is important for our paths to change. I think some people think that might not be a good thing, but it is good for us to naturally evolve and grow and expand our knowledge of ourselves, of our community, and where we fit in this puzzle or this framework of our community and the world that we are entrenched in. So with that said, Jeff, I'll go back to you specifically. When we were at the conference, we talked a lot because we're both in this role of exploring the mo'okua'ahau of our ohana. Can you talk a little bit more about how you stepped into that kuleana, what led you there, and what keeps you motivated around that?
Yeah, sure. So like you mentioned in the beginning, in 2009, we had a family reunion in Hawaii. And our family was the one that was in charge of the reunion. So my sister was the chairperson. And she just asked me, hey, can you do our genealogy? And I said, I know our grandparents, great grandma, but you know, that's where it ended, right? So I just started looking at the previous, I guess, genealogy books that was made from the previous reunions. And I just started going online, reading a lot of the books and stuff. And then I eventually bought a lot of the books that those of us who know in genealogy, especially Edith McKenzie, John Papa'i'i, David Malo, those are all gold books, right? I have literally every collection of books since Fast Forward Now. I'm pretty sure I have an array of stuff that helps me. But I had one of our aunties, she knew everybody, how we were related. And she knew everybody's birthdays. She would call us wherever we're at to wish us a happy birthday. And I always admired that. I'm thinking to myself, how do you know all this? Like, to me, she was our family historian at that time when she was alive, because she passed away in 05. And that's the reason why we had the reunion online, because my mom and my auntie and my other auntie, because she passed away, she said it's important to have a reunion. So we did, and that's what happened, and it was a great success. But since then, I haven't stopped. I mean, I thought it was ending just with that one family, with my mom's side, and it didn't. I literally went every other side, every angle, and then I did my dad's side, the side that we didn't know, or we were told that our grandfather was an orphan, and come to find out, he wasn't. So I was able to actually find his parents and all that. They're buried in Boston, which I want to make my way there to the East Coast to go to their graves, because I know exactly where they're at. So that's how I started, and it's never ending. If you think it's going to end, it doesn't. And sometimes I want to just shut the door, I don't know, but they just keep coming to me like, you're not done. So some people wouldn't understand. I don't really talk about that part of it because as an outsider looking in, they probably think I'm cuckoo or lolo. But to those who are in this realm of the family history thing, it's they understand. So there's a lot of things that they don't understand or we don't see, but it's there. So that's how I started anyway.
Yeah, I totally can relate because as I do my own research too, it is fascinating because like I've seen my family names in things, but all the pieces didn't come together. But if you think about like the people, just like your so many ancestors and the time that they were living in, the role that they played in society, it helps you see there's things in your life where you're like, why the heck am I here? But when you understand that relation to like your ohana and like, oh, so that's why I'm over here too. Okay. That it's a huge part of your identity. So if you're watching and you have not explored it, it is a rabbit hole, but it is a fun, fantastic, rewarding rabbit hole. And I think it's what I feel like is fun is to see my family light up when I tell them the stories. Oh, did you know about this kupuna or this tutu? And this is what they did. And they're like, what? Really? Oh, tell me some more. Who is that? So yeah, I love this part of our culture. So when we look at genealogy and mo'okuhau, Kaka, I have a question for you. You know, as a kumu practicing outside the piko of Hawaii, how has your kuleana as a cultural practitioner changed over time? What challenges have you faced when engaging and interacting with others who don't have a deep understanding of lua and its importance to our culture?
As far as being away from Hawaii and training out in the mainland, the one thing I found fascinating was that even though I'm off the aina, the tupuna walk with me. So the thing is that regardless where I go, that connection and their presence is always with me. So it really hasn't, as far as training and my connection, it really hasn't changed that much. I mean, obviously, when you go home, you can obviously feel the intensity because you're at home and you can feel the mana. And so, but yet as far as training, as soon as I start moving in lua, regardless of wherever I'm at, I feel the presence of the tupuna with me. So it really, other than the intensity of being home, there's not really too much of a difference as far as moving lua and my kuleana. So, and then what was the second part? You had a couple different sections of that question.
Yeah. So the second part was what challenges have you faced, if any, when you engage or interact with others who don't have an understanding of lua and the importance of it in Kanaka Maoli culture? So I've just heard like some kind of misperceptions about lua and some about how it fits. Is it just Hawaiian martial arts? How does it differ from the different forms and why? Like, where does lua fit within the context and fabric of Hawaiian culture as protectors of our ali'i and that kind of aspect?
The thing is that initially, especially for people who aren't familiar with lua at all or Hawaiian culture, so when going to explain that, initially you just take baby steps with them because if I sit here and I drop everything on them at one time, because of their lack of knowledge on our culture, let alone the deeper meanings and the aspects of it to all of us Hawaiians. So it's a lot and people will get lost really quickly. So I just incrementally introduce them to the smaller aspects of our culture first and then connect them into, okay, so this is where lua is within our culture. And then this is what this represents. So giving them that understanding piece by piece. And the thing is that doing it that way, it's actually amazing how people start to grasp the concepts, especially that these are foreign concepts to people. So that's the approach I usually take with them as far as, you know, Kanaka Maoli culture and then lua and its place. And then once they start to make the connections, then not only do they have the understanding, but they actually have the deeper level of understanding and appreciation for it. So that's the approach I take with them. And honestly, not really too many difficulties, because the thing is, because Kanaka Maoli culture is not completely familiar around the world, and especially Lua within that aspect of our culture. So people are actually really open and motivated to learn because they find our culture fascinating once they learn the deeper aspects of it. And then when you start sharing the aspects of Lua, just the general aspects, obviously there's certain things that I'm not going to share with them, which is also part of my kuleana as well. But the general aspects of it, it's actually really fascinating at how they're able to take it in and they have a deeper appreciation.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, even as someone who is Kanaka, I never learned about Lua growing up. I think it's the generational trauma of our kupuna, at least my grandparents and even my parents, like being shamed for speaking olelo or practicing any aspect of our culture, all of these different practices being outlawed. And so unfortunately, like I, like many others in my generation, at least, don't have access to the knowledge. So I know for me, I'm always asking kumumanu like more about Lua, and specifically about being a wahine kia'i in a space that is kane dominated, right? So that kind of translates into my question that I had for Kia'i Rochelle is, what are some of the unique opportunities that you faced when carrying out your kuleana as a wahine koa Lua and a kia'i okapuka, or a guardian of the gate?
I have a few stumbling blocks. As you can tell, I'm not Islander. Big surprise. However, my ancestry also comes from an island. We know what it's like to have our religion, language, and culture obliterated by an invading force. We know what it's like to be forced to serve that invading force. And I think that's why in Hawaii's history, they found so many Scots to be allies, to be close advisors. King Kamehameha I, 3, 4, and 5 had the same Scot. But as a wahine in particular, it has been challenging. The history of wahine koa is there, is documented, but it is underplayed. It is written off. It is not seen as the totality of the individual. Wahine are very powerful. We are not as tall, maybe, or as physically broad, but our talents, our skills, our intellect, our stratagem, very powerful. As I have grown, as I have gone from a haumana to a koa to a kia'i, my drive to preserve and to honor with ano, pono, only continues to grow. When I have returned to the islands, some islands are more embracing than others. Some of the aina immediately was transformative, warming, and loving. Others, resistant, angry, hostile. As I, like Kia'i Kaika, as I moved in the Lua, that more hostile environment softened and accepted. If the aina can accept, then so too can the people. But it is a constant showing. It is a constant train. It is a constant education. Not only my own education, but educating of others. And I think that's key to any protection of the study. Like Ikaika, there are many aspects that I do not discuss, I do not share. Even in the bio that you read for me, I did not go into my titles. Titles are not my kuleana. Protection and preservation are. Did that hit all of your caveats?
Oh, yes, 100%. Yes. I mean, I said a bunch of different insightful things, like you dropped up things right there. And I think the one thing that kind of hit me was, if the aina can accept, so too can the people. And I heard that kind of messaging at the Native Hawaiian Conference too, in that Hawaii is it's a special place that will really, it's welcoming, But you also, you have Kuleana too, like to the island itself, to be a steward of it, to be to Malama Aina, like to take care of it. Because in order for Hawaii itself to reflect that back to you, like you have to give it to it. It's the reciprocity, the dual nature of things, which is really important for people to understand, whether you're a visitor, right? Like, or if you're trying to understand the culture and what that, I don't want to say magic, because that's, I hate that word. It's a word that gives a different connotation, but just that special mana that Hawaii offers that is really hard. It's intangible unless you go there and experience it yourself and come with that right, the right and attitude.
Geographically, each island is so different.
Mm-hmm.
Every island is so different. I shared with my pa my experience the first time I ever went to the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still very emotional for me. I had never been in a physical location outside of a spot in Scotland, different story. But outside of there, I have never been in a place on this planet that transformed me, that literally made me feel hugged.
Mm-hmm.
When the wind blew, I felt an embrace. And no, it wasn't just because the perfect weather and the sun was out. It was absolutely transformative. And until you experience that, until you have that connection with land, with the natural environment around you, I don't think you can really understand.
Definitely. Yeah, the embrace of the wind, I like that you mentioned that too, because those are the aspects that are incorporated in our mele or in our song. We talk about those things that just make this place special. So mahalo for mentioning that. So I wanted to bring it back and ask a question about accountability with Kuleana, and particularly one for you both, Kia'i Rochelle and Kia'i Ikaika, as Kumu Kokua and leaders within Kapalua Oʻomanu. Like, how is accountability handled or enforced when Haumana or Koa do not uphold their own Kuleana? And either one, whoever wants to answer first is fine.
So it's similar to protocols that they use in the military. So initially, if you see something or a haumana and they're not abiding by their kuleana, and so you'll pull them to the side, have a discussion with them, because sometimes some people just might not be aware. So initially you inform them and let them know, hey, look, and you just inform them that maybe they're guiding out, they're going off-roading a little bit, and you're bring them back in. And then after that, now, once having that discussion, and then you work with them so that they stay on track. And then if now things start repeating or there's a pattern, then there's other protocols that happen as well. Because at this point too, then is this something that is their environment, whether something's going on in their life? And from there, then we take the appropriate steps. I'm not really going to mention what those steps are, but it's there to set the haumana up for success. And the thing is that it's just a matter of, it's the haumana and their actions that determines which solution and which approach is taken. So hopefully it's the first stages, but then sometimes we gotta go a little bit deeper, but it does get taken care of, and the haumana gets set back on track and step back into their kuleana. Or if they don't, and if there's an issue, they no longer have their kuleana. So
we walk a balancing line between our roles as au and our role as kiai, depending on the haumana and what the potential infraction is. It could be something as simple as a conversation. It could be something where we put old hat on and we sit there and we have a little one-on-one counseling session. It is ultimately, the study of lua is not a martial art. The study of lua is life, is balance. So the martial aspect is great for physicality, physical health, physical security, physical world. But we also very much are committed to growing as individuals spiritually and intellectually. So if we have a member of our pod that is struggling, we do what we can to assist and to provide a safe space for them to seek help.
That's wonderful. I think understanding what a little bit of what Ikaika was saying, understanding what the student is going through, like seeing the whole picture, right? And not just automatically jumping to a conclusion and helping Malama, like Malama them and see where they're coming from and how we can set them up for success, greater Kuleana, right? And helping them along that journey. Now, some people are not ready for that. And like you said, we have to take action against to address those. But I love that it's not just the physical aspect. I know Kumumana would talk about the metaphysical, like the other aspects and other Kuleana within that role. Let's see. So where are we? Okay, we got 15 minutes left. So trying to keep us on time. Let's see. I had a broader question. So talk about our own Kuleana and what that looks like for each of us, but also as important, whether it's other adults that are within our circle and within our sphere. But I like to always incorporate our youth because that is our next generation. Those who are looking to us as leaders, as examples, as role models, whether we know it or not, they're always looking, right? They're always watching to see, to understand how we operate so that they too can understand how they should be operating. How can we help Opio, like our youth, embrace their Kuleana, like in today's modern world where like our Kanaka are dispersed, right? Like the ones in Hawaii are obviously closer in physical proximity and have, I would say, maybe better access to culture, to practitioners, like just more mentors and more folks speaking into their life and more access to the practices. But like, how can we help youth, especially those in the diaspora who may not have access to that? How can we help them to embrace their Kuleana? And that's for everyone. That's a question for everyone. It doesn't necessarily have to be Kuleana in Lua, just Kuleana, helping others to recognize what is their Kuleana and maybe helping them feel empowered to step into their role.
I think one thing that's important as far as that is explaining to them that call that the tupuna give you, right? So the thing is that sometimes people get that call to step into a Kuleana, but they're not aware what that is. And so the thing is, first off, in explaining to the youth, hey, so when you have this feeling and you can explain what it is, this drive to learn more about a specific area within our culture, and you don't know what it is, and having them identify that first, because a lot of people might be called and pulled, but they don't understand what it is. So the first thing is explaining that. And then from there, then you can go into the deeper levels of, okay, so what that is, and explaining it in a way that they can comprehend it. So the thing is that, so for all of us, we're adults, so we understand concepts, very complex concepts of our Kuleana. But then for the youth, breaking it down into pieces where they can absorb, understand the concept, and then from there, help guide them to whichever way that they're being pulled.
Mahalo for that.
I think you also need to break the isolation of being part of diaspora. When you are cut off from the pack, so to speak, you lose that emphasis. You lose the importance of why you should bother to learn. Why? I'm not there. Why? It's not my everyday. And as adults around these young people, it is our Kuleana to show them why it is still alive, why it is important to make that connection, why it matters. So get them to get off that telephone. Get them to stop binge watching on the television. Get them to talk to their tutu. Get them to, in the kitchen to go cook something with their tutu and figure out why it matters. But that encouragement, that modeling, Jeff, you probably have to do that with your kids all the time, right?
Yeah, Jeff, I feel like you have that the unique kind of space where you are too, because there's a little bit of both, right? There is the connectivity of the community within Las Vegas, but you're still in a different space. So what are your thoughts from your perspective?
So when I graduated from high school when I was 17, I went away to college to Boise, Idaho. And obviously I went from the sun to the snow, right? And I didn't know anybody. I think my one classmate came, we went to college together, but then she eventually left. So it was me by myself, this young 18-year-old trying to find himself in the world kind of thing. So I was fortunate that I ran into other kids from Hawaii that attended college there. And we eventually decided to put together at the university. I was its first president in 92, I believe. And it has grown since then. But I also started meeting like people in the community who's been living there for 40, 50 years, born and raised in Hawaii, and they left. But we would always have get-togethers. Every Friday nights, we would have dinner. And it was like, there would be singing, kulele, we'll be dancing hula. And everybody and anybody who had any ties to the island would come. We would go to different people's houses. But it was like to keep me abreast with our culture and still connected to home. And go figure, in Boise, Idaho, right? You don't think there's any Hawaiians there, but there's more now living there, all in the boonies, I call it, like all over the place. But I think staying connected is big, especially for the OPO that live here in the States. And it does start with the parents. You can't really do much if you're by yourself, like what she was saying. But I think the parents need to lead the family, and they need to embrace the culture, do whatever they need to. I mean, if you got to go online, you got to watch videos, buy the books, send your kids to, if you can, explorations or any kind of cultural event that's maybe in the area, do it. Because that's what I did with my two boys. We would go to all the papa events. I would show them how we make poi, do pa'iai, and then things that I maybe am not familiar with, there's always somebody that's a master in that, right? They can teach them. So I was always about our culture, to embrace that. So, but it is a challenge living here in the States. Here in Vegas, we're a little bit more fortunate because there are a lot of us here, and there's a lot of different organizations, and we have a little classes here now. We do have functions here for the OPO here, ran by another friend of mine that lives here, who is very cultural minded as well, and speaks the language and everything. So there are people here that do that. But I just think doing whatever you have to stay connected is pretty big and pretty huge. So
yeah, 100% kakou'o that. And one thing that you mentioned that I wanted to point is that for anybody who's watching this, the message that I want you to know is that everybody has shared kuleana, like from a community aspect, to contribute their, whatever their calling is, right? Their kuleana is to contribute to a healthy and thriving community. Everybody has that role to play. And just if you're like on the fence about what your kuleana is, like talk to somebody about it, because when you don't fulfill your kuleana, there's those negative impacts too, right? Like it's not just an impact to you, but you have a gift that needs to be shared broader outside of you. And that is your kuleana. So I always think about folks who, I don't know, it was too shy, too shame, too whatever, like whatever the voices are that might be in your head about, I don't know if I'm good enough to do that, or, you know, that kind of thing. But I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's really important for you to know your genealogy and your roots and where you come from so that you can feel more empowered to step into that kuleana. I know for me, like when I was young, I knew I had to do something. I didn't know what it was going to be at the time, but there's always the tupuna is always talking to me like, that's you. If you don't see it, that's you. You know that, right? That's you. And sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds so hard though. When you're navigating a space that you feel like nobody else has done before. But that is my kuleana.
And so if you're watching, I hope that you understand what your kuleana is and that you're embracing it. And I would definitely encourage you to do that. Because, for example, take Jeff. If he didn't have his kuleana of knowing his mo'oku hauhā when I met him, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. It's like the excitement that kind of just attracts people. Oh my gosh, yes, keep me going. Like, I'm not the only one doing this. Yes. And the same thing for Kumu Michelle and her haumana and koa here. I've always wanted to learn more about Lua, but I didn't have access, right? But Kumumano has just been showing me a little bit. I keep asking her questions. And Ikaiko is saying she's probably only giving me a little bit because I'm not ready for everything. But if they were not fulfilling their kuleana, I couldn't get my mana'o too, right? And same, it doesn't even have to be me. Whoever they encounter as well. I know there's a bunch of koa in the chat who have been engaging with us tonight. So I want to mahalo them for joining us. I know Kumu, she made this a priority and she canceled classes. So mahalo sis, mahalo Kumu Manu. So yeah, I just wanted to leave it on that positive note. Is there anything else, any other mana'o that you guys would want our viewers to know, share, take away in terms of kuleana that we didn't cover yet tonight?
Mahalo nui for the invitation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great having your perspective.
I think Jeff, Kia, you were showing, I think we covered a lot of different bases as far as kuleana. And it's the three of us, it's interesting between where I was mentioning answering the call of the tupuna, and then Kia Rochelle was talking about the deeper levels within your kuleana, and then Jeff talks about the responsibilities in knowing your line. So I think all those components are important. And what Jeff said was, especially if you're on the mainland, just staying connected with the culture. And at times, and even with your kuleana, which you're being pulled to, it may be difficult, and you might be in a place in Boise, or you might be in North Carolina in the middle of nowhere. Do what you can to get connected, get the information. It's a little easier to get the information out there. And like what Jeff said, staying connected, I think it's so important, regardless of where you're at. And then just have your ear open and listen to where the tupuna guides you and your mm-hmm. gifts that you've been blessed with.
Mahalo. Jeff, do you have anything else?
So this is for the listeners out there. No be shame. We live in a time where things are different. And I know there's still a lot of pain and sorrow from the past. But we live now, you know what I mean? Don't be afraid to be Kanaka. Don't be ashamed to be Hawaiian, mm-hmm. no matter what. Be proud. Do what you got to do. I mean, yeah. For me, I've learned so much from a long time ago till now. I've developed and I became a different person in a good way. And as I get older, things mean a little bit more to me than I did when I was 18. All the going out and partying, stuff like that, it don't mean anything to me anymore. Like, my goals are so different. I rather just, you know, stay home and be like, enjoy like just quiet time. I know it sounds weird, but I do a lot of reminiscing and remembering growing up, you know, what our tutus and stuff like that. A lot of them are gone now, but we're still here. So we still owe it to them to do what we have to do for today and for the kids who are living today, for the next generation, for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So like I said, I hope for all your listeners out there, don't be ashamed. Now's the time to be who you are. Be Kanaka, be Hawaiian. Whatever that means to you, it doesn't matter. So that's my little mana'o.
Love it.
Beautiful said, Jeff.
Yes, 100% support. I mean, and I'll bring it back to what we talked about at the beginning is part of the kuleana is to honor our tutu and our ancestors and everyone who came before, to keep their stories alive, to keep our culture thriving, stay connected. However that connection is for you, it hits us in different ways. And also don't compare it to what your kuleana is to the next person. There is no, oh, mine not as good. Everybody has that. It is a kako thing. That's a huge part of our culture as well. So yeah, I just want to say huge mahalo nui for helping me to really expand upon this concept of kuleana, because I think with a lot of our words, people only see the very scratched surface meaning of what that truly means. And so it is an honor for me to have you all here to talk about the different ways that we view it and to help those who are, whether they are Kanaka and understand our culture or are seeking their own path as well. I hope this helps you all as listeners. Please share it so that others can feel supported with their kuleana as well. Share, hit the share button. You can like our channel, subscribe to our channel so you can get all of our wonderful conversations. We are continuing our Olelo Hawaii month. We have a separate panel every week, all throughout the week of February. And this is leap year, so we have 5 Thursdays this month. The other conversations that we'll be talking about next week is Malama Aina and what that means. I think the 3rd week we're talking about aloha, and oh my gosh, that's going to be a good one. What does that really mean? And then we're also talking about pono and pilina, what that means. There's another one, but ohana. Come on. What does ohana mean and what that looks like for our kupuna, our community? So mahalo for being here and being a part of our ohana to our speakers. Mahalo for joining us. And to our listeners and our viewers out there in the internets, the interwebs, mahalo for staying connected to your culture this way by being a part of our podcast and tuning in. On behalf of the Moana Nui, Ohana, Dana, Latoya, Biazi, Pauahi, and Papa Olalokahi, we really appreciate y'all being here with us. So everybody take care. Malama pono, ahui ho, until we see you all again. Bye-bye.
So many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if they won't tell it, we will.
If this the land of the free, was the freedom then? When they annexed Hawaii and called it Seagal Lands, without any type of payment and no signing off, called themselves the Republic in 1894. 1.2 million acres overtaken from the native Hawaiians. When they resisted, the West retaliated in violence and erasure. The Hawaiian language is banned as part of colonialism's plan to expand, yeah.
Stuck between a rock and a hard place, multiple bombings of Koholave, as a part of their ongoing war with Asia, used it as a place for target practice. No consent or compensation, colonizers call for annexation. No regard for all the locals, school will never let you know. So many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will. Too many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will. We will.
So if we put Hawaii in a perspective, well, black and Asian history is interconnected. Considering the fight with the Pacific, then of course, versus Asia, they was treated as a middleman for war, but didn't let the Western colorism run its course, cause dark skin was a sign of dignity to core. The land was taken in the name of capitalism, when prior to it was an actual kingdom. Clap back at the system.
Stuck between a rock and a hard place, multiple bombings of Koholave, as a part of their ongoing war with Asia, used it as a place for target practice. No consent or compensation, colonizers call for annexation. Never got for all the locals, school will never let you know. So many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will. Too many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will. So many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will. Too many stories left to tell, even if we have to ourselves. Can't keep history on the shelf, if we won't tell it, we will.